From NPR and the Futuro Media Group, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. And today, a trip to the deserts of southern Arizona.
You know, every can out there has a story to tell. We don't know what the story is. It's all about tragedy and broken dreams.
The border residents who collect what migrants leave behind and transform it into art. And a night camping out with a volunteer border militia.
Our main goal is to put a hurting on the cartel, because they're the ones over there destroying that country, and their product they're bringing this way is destroying this country.
Plus the culture of the borderlands, from hot dogs topped with guacamole to the thriving Tucson music scene. All this and more coming up on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Stay with us. No se vayan. Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to Latino USA. The Ask Me Another podcast is like trivia night, but a lot funnier. And on the latest episode, they have an extra special guest, Sir Patrick Stewart. He talks about living in Brooklyn, becoming a knight, and his new talk show, Blunt Talk. Then Sir Patrick recites well-known song lyrics with all the gravitas of a West End performance. So go play along now at npr.org/podcasts or on the NPR One app. Welcome to Latino USA, everyone. I'm Maria Hinojosa. We start today's show with a story.
I used to work for this man, and he was from the Midwest. I helped him with his wife.
Telling this story is Antonia Gallegos. Antonia's an artist who lives in southern Arizona, where she was born and raised. The wife of the man she worked for had a stroke, so Antonia would stay with her while he went out to do the shopping.
And I remember he came home one day, and he was very angry, and he says, "This darn phone, it just never works the way I want it to work." And I said, "Well, what happened?" And he says, "I'm coming down the road, and about 10 illegals crossed the road right in front of me, just as bold as could be. They just ran right across the road, had to slam on my brakes. I tried calling the Border Patrol to turn them in, and my phone would not work." And he says, "Now here it is. Now it's working. Fine time." And he was pretty angry. So he says, "You'd have called the Border Patrol, wouldn't you?" And he's telling me, and I said, "Well, you're a religious man." I said, "Do you believe in miracles?" He goes, "Well, yeah, I believe in miracles." I said, "Well, you know, I was thinking about it, and when these people leave their home way away, where they're coming all the way up, I said, the last thing they do before they leave is they go and they get a blessing for their trip. And then once they leave, I said, the people in the community on Sunday morning, they pray for them that they make it safely across. So they're praying for a miracle." I said, "So, you know, I was thinking, what if as they were running across that road and you were right there, there was a miracle happening and your phone wasn't working?" I said, "You know, if that was God's work, I really don't think I would have wanted to get in the way." He said, "Well, well, I guess you could be right."
Antonia's story is an example of the kinds of conversations that people sometimes have who live on the border. And that's what we're talking about today. We're calling our episode Border World, taking a look not just at the border, but the whole world that the border creates around it. The culture, the politics, the everyday stories of people who live in and around the borderlands. So today, we're focusing in on southern Arizona. And I'm joined now by Latino USA producer Marlon Bishop. Hey, Marlon.
How's it going, Maria?
Good. So, Marlon, you recently visited Arizona to report some stories for us.
Yeah. And so the thing that really got me about that trip was, okay, so immigration is this huge polarizing political issue all over the country. But for the people who actually live there on the border, immigration isn't some abstract news story. It's quite literally in their backyards.
Right, because like in the story that we just heard, you know, you might be shopping, but somebody is crossing the street and they're an undocumented immigrant making their way north.
What also got me was in the middle of the Sonoran Desert, you have these kind of tidy suburban subdivisions that are total slices of Americana. You know, they have their manicured lawns. And right next to them are the migrant trails where people are taking this really dangerous and harrowing journey.
It's really so stark that these two realities, so different, exist literally side by side each other.
Yeah, and sometimes they even touch. Especially for people who live in more remote border communities, it's not uncommon to come across migrants in search of help. Here's Antonia Gallegos again.
When we find them, or when they find us, it's because they've gotten separated from a group and they're lost. They're usually exhausted and they're hungry and their feet are blistered.
So when a migrant is seeking help, you're actually faced with this dilemma, because under federal law, it's actually illegal to transport or to, quote unquote, harbor somebody that's trying to enter the country without authorization. So what do you do?
It's a tough decision you have to make. But in Antonia's case, she chooses to help the migrants.
Sometimes, you know, we say, you know, you can't stay here. But if you go over there, you know, you're not on our property. So if you get found, you know, it's not coming back on us. But yeah, here's some water, here's some food.
Of course, Antonia's choice is controversial. There are very strong feelings about immigration and border security in Arizona on all sides of the issue.
Right, and in many ways, one of the things that Antonia actually does for work is in response to those strong feelings. She's an artist, and her work deals with the border. And what is her medium of choice? The actual belongings that migrants have left behind in the desert. And it turns out that there are several artists in the area who work with the same material. Marlon met up with a few of them when he was in Arizona recently and picks up the story there.
You can see from right here how if you were not with somebody who knew how to go through here, where the road was.
Oh, God, I'd feel so lost.
Yeah.
I'm with Deborah McCullough and her husband, Ed. We're standing in the middle of the desert, about 15 miles from the U.S.-Mexico border.
So we're going to start down this trail.
Deborah and Ed live in Tucson, and they're part of a volunteer group called the Tucson Samaritans. Once a week, they go out and leave jugs of water on the trails used by migrants coming from Mexico.
Have you ever gotten lost?
No, my husband's the GPS man.
We've never been lost. There were a number of times where I wasn't quite sure where I was.
All around us, as far as the eye can see, there's nothing but cacti and craggy red mountains. It's beautiful, but you wouldn't want to be lost out here. The weather is scorching hot, well over 100 degrees, and it's super dry. It's kind of like being in a sauna you can't leave. Pretty soon after we start down the trail, we begin to see the belongings.
I just found some kind of cream in a tube here.
Oh, that's some kind of an antiseptic.
The trail is a river of human refuse, just littered everywhere you look with items left behind by migrants on their trip north. There are lots of backpacks and jackets.
Look, it's a cell phone instruction manual.
We find a lot of shoes. That's one of the things I've always collected, shoes.
Deborah collects migrant shoes because she's an artist. She uses the objects she finds in the desert to make sculptures and multimedia installations. She's also on the lookout for more intimate items.
Letters from kids to their mom, love letters, you know, don't forget me sort of.
And?
Okay, so here is a toothbrush, one of the things I always look for.
Toothbrushes. One of Deborah's works is a toothbrush installation consisting of 400 toothbrushes she's found, as well as about 500 tubes of toothpaste bound together in a giant bundle. She believes the power of using these objects in art is that it makes migrants more relatable to the sorts of people who tend to dehumanize them.
These aren't just random people that are coming that we don't know anything about that are just scary and everything.
That's Antonia Gallegos again, the artist we heard from before. She also works with migrant belongings.
These women use the same perfume that I use. Their children carry the same kind of backpacks that our children carry. And so it makes them not so different.
And we all have to eat.
That's what caught my eye, those cans.
Canned tuna is the most common food that migrants eat on the road. It's cheap, lightweight, and high in protein. As a result, trails are completely covered in empty tuna cans.
Every can out there has a story to tell. We don't know what the story is, but it's all about tragedy and broken dreams.
That's Alvaro Enciso, another Tucson-based artist. Devereaux hammers out the tuna cans into flat decorative shapes and uses them to make abstract mixed-media paintings. Alvaro is originally from Colombia, so he's a migrant of sorts himself, although he came here with a student visa and on a plane. For him, the art is all about how fragile the chance for a better life is for the border crossers.
You die out there, or you get caught by the border patrol, or something happens, so the American dream gets compromised along the way somehow.
Alvaro can't stop thinking about the deaths. Altogether, 2,500 bodies have been found in this part of the desert.
So this is the information I get from the county.
He shows me a spreadsheet from the Tucson Medical Examiner with detailed records about the migrant deaths, coordinates of where the bodies were found, biographical information when it's available.
And this is the cause of death. Blunt force injury meant that he probably fell off a cliff.
He uses the information to execute something he calls the Red Dot Project. It's named after the red dots you'd see on county maps marking the deaths.
He decided to go to every place where someone have died over the years. These are remote places in the middle of nowhere, and we put a cross where that person died.
Alvaro paints the crosses and decorates them with objects he finds in the desert. They're really quite beautiful, with a kind of post-apocalyptic vibe to them. He's placed about 150 of them so far.
And those crosses will not be seen by anybody because no one ever goes there. But they are there to sort of keep company to the ghost of someone who perished. So I'm creating art for no one to see.
Antonia Gallegos has also made art about migrant deaths, but her work is very much meant to be seen. Together with Deborah McCullough and another artist named Valerie James, she created a sculpture called Las Madres, meaning the mothers. It consists of three life-sized female figures. They represent the grieving mothers back in Mexico and Central America whose children have died crossing the border.
When you see the figures, you know, we wanted them to stand out looking across the desert. They're looking across the desert looking for their children.
They made the piece as a kind of response to the strong anti-immigrant rhetoric they had been hearing in Arizona. They figured, whatever you think about people who cross the border, everybody can sympathize with a mother who has lost her child. And then they had another idea. Why not make the mothers out of the migrant clothes they found?
You know, here we got these clothes, and these clothes, they have the sweat of the people crossing the desert. Their DNA is in this clothing. So if we make the mothers out of this clothing, we will essentially be making the mothers out of the same DNA of their children that are crossing.
Today, the Las Madres sculptures stand on a college campus in Tucson. All are identical in shape, but different in color. One is sculpted out of khaki pants, another jeans, and another from burlap sacks. Over time, their faces have started to melt in the desert sun, creating the illusion that the mothers are crying. The act of making art around this topic, it can weigh really heavily on the artists themselves. Here's Alvaro Enciso again, the guy behind the Red Dot Project.
I have to let the sentimentality out of the project, otherwise it will drive me crazy. I cannot take so much suffering. Otherwise, I'm going to need psychiatric help one day.
But the reason they make the art is that hopefully viewers take on some of that suffering themselves. And just maybe, the artists hope, it'll even generate a little sympathy.
By the way, Marlon worked with a photographer named Alicia Fernandez on that story. She works for El Diario in Juarez, Mexico. Check out her photographs of the art that you just heard about on our website, latinousa.org. And our story was produced in association with Round Earth Media. Coming up on Latino USA.
I had the American dream. I had the three-bedroom house with a two-car garage and the swimming pool, and then it all went to hell.
What motivates someone to give up his life, grab a gun, and move to the border? Stay with us. No se vayan.
Te mando saludos, te guardo todo mi son. mando saludos, te guardo todo mi son, te mando mi cariñito, te extraño mucho mi amor.
Mi cucharita de azúcar,
mi cucharita de la miel,
mi cucharita de manzana,
esa caricia de tu piel.
Mi cucharita de azúcar,
mi cucharita de la miel.
Hey everyone, we really appreciate you listening to our podcast this week with our special visit to Arizona and our piece on the borderlands. It's this kind of reporting that really sets what we do apart, and we know that you know that. So do me a favor, go to latinousa.org, click on the donate button, and one other big thing, rate and review our show on iTunes. It really helps us a lot. Now back to Border World.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Lumber Liquidators, a proud sponsor of NPR, offering more than 400 styles, including hardwood, bamboo, laminate, and vinyl, with flooring specialists in hundreds of stores nationwide. More at lumberliquidators.com or 1-800-HARDWOOD. And the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, supporting creative people and effective institutions committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information is at macfound.org.
Welcome back, everyone, to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa, and today I'm with Latino USA producer Marlon Bishop. And we're talking about the unique world that surrounds the U.S.-Mexico border.
A place we're calling Border World.
Right. Now, we just heard from members of humanitarian groups that go out into the desert and they leave water for migrants.
But they're not the only people out on the migrant trails.
Armed civilian militia groups that are looking to stop migrants and drug traffickers from crossing the border are also out there.
The most famous, you might have heard of them, was the Minutemen. The group was really active in the early 2000s, but they've kind of died down since.
But other groups have since popped up. And Marlon, you actually spoke with several members of one of them.
Yes, I met up with a militia group called Arizona Border Recon. They caught my attention because they have this really beautifully designed website. It looks like almost as if it were a tech startup site with an interactive intel map, and it's connected to all their social media accounts. So I got in touch with the group's leader, Tim Foley, and he invited me to spend a night out with them in the desert. I asked a friend and fellow reporter who knows the lay of the land better to come with me.
Hi, Marlon.
Hey, Fernanda. Fernanda Echavarri reports on the border for KUAZ, Arizona Public Media in Tucson. And we had quite an experience going out to meet them, didn't we?
We sure did.
Okay. So we're rolling.
So we've been driving down a dirt road in the middle of the night in the middle of the Sonoran Desert.
The road is getting a little bit more difficult to drive through at this point. There is nothing around here.
No,
like not a speck of light. All there is just desert wilderness.
Yeah. After a few hours of driving back and forth in the pitch black desert, we eventually made it to their camp outside Aravaca, about 12 miles from the border. There were a half dozen tents and a few vehicles.
Right away, we're greeted by Tim Foley and his black American pit bull.
This is Rocco. He's a rescue.
Tim is wiry and fit at 56 years old. He's wearing a camo t-shirt and a pistol on his hip. Arizona is an open carry state after all. He smokes cigarettes constantly.
Our main goal is to put a hurting on the cartel because they're the ones over there destroying that country, and their product they're bringing this way is destroying this country.
When we meet Tim, Arizona Border Recon is actually taking a night off after what he calls an op.
Since Sunday, we've sealed up 8 miles of dope trails. We've been out here for 5 years, so we know where their main routes are.
He says they'll climb up mountains to disrupt cartel scout locations, and they stand guard on trails that are normally used by drug runners. This is sort of like a high-stakes game of chicken.
And so by plugging up those things, we interrupt their supply chain and their time schedule of their drug delivery and stuff.
If they come across migrants or traffickers in the desert, they stop them and call Border Patrol to come and arrest them. And of course, they carry more than just pistols.
My preferred weapon for self-defense is a 12-gauge shotgun.
Other guys in the group carry AR-15 assault rifles. Some go out with GPS devices and even night vision goggles.
But Tim wasn't always a leader of a tiny paramilitary army, and his story does not begin in the borderlands.
Born and raised in California, which is now the PRK, We call it the People's Republic of California.
And from the way he describes it, his younger years were pretty wild.
I grew up in the 60s in San Francisco, so I found out about drugs and everything at an early age. I was a practicing alcoholic and addict probably for 20-some-odd years. I don't know if you remember the Life cereal commercial. Give it to Mikey, he eats anything. I was the Mikey of the drug world.
Eventually, Tim got sober and turned his life around. He enlisted in the Army, though never deployed overseas. Afterwards, he worked as a firefighter and an EMT, and for a while, he fixed Harley Davidsons.
And in 2001, Tim ended up in Phoenix, working in construction.
I was building high-rises, and I ran 150-man crews.
Things were going well, but then the 2008 financial crash happened, and he lost his job basically overnight.
I had the American dream. I had the three-bedroom house with a two-car garage and the swimming pool, and then it all went to hell. So I started traveling the country looking for the type of work I was doing. Well, what I was being paid $40 an hour was now paying $15 an hour. And I started noticing it was more and more illegals going in and chopping the wages because there were so many of them. So I said, I got to do something.
Frustrated and adrift, Tim picked up and drove to southern Arizona.
So I came down here, and I actually lived in the mountains in my truck for 2 months when I first came here.
He felt the border was wide open, and if the government wasn't going to do anything about it, he would.
He began meeting like-minded individuals and started a Facebook page to attract more.
In the beginning, it was to go after illegals.
But as he learned more and more about drug cartels and their role at the border, he decided to switch the group's focus from fighting illegal immigration to stopping the flow of drugs.
The group has 6 core members and about 30 that come and go. We're heading over to the center of the camp to meet one of them, the only one willing to talk to us. Everyone else is in their tents.
I'm Fernanda. What's your name?
I'm Pete. How you doing?
Nice to
meet
you.
Hey, Marlon.
Pete Lantieri, like Tim, is not originally from the Southwest.
I was born in the Bronx, but I grew up in Long Island.
Pete is also former military. He started taking trips to the border 10 years ago to volunteer with various militia groups. Last year, Pete finally sold his house and decided to move to the border to dedicate himself to the cause full time.
When you serve your country, even after you take the uniform off, the oath still applies. Things are just getting worse in this country by the day. So, just trying to do my part.
Pete still owns an electrical contracting business back in New York. He says that's how he's able to volunteer for Arizona Border Recon.
The group's missions are self-funded by its members and online donations. And Tim says he's been living off his pension.
We've sacrificed everything to do this 24/7, you know. My idea of going out to eat is I take my dinner and go stand on my front porch.
The guys see their activities as selfless and inherently patriotic. But Tim admits there's a gap between how they see themselves and how society at large sees them.
There's idiots out there that do it wrong, and that's what the media pounces on.
Tim is probably alluding to people like Shauna Ford, a former member of the Minutemen who, in 2009, killed a man and his third-grade daughter in their home. She entered the house hoping to find drugs and money to finance her own militia group. The incident soured the public on border militias pretty dramatically.
See, it's white guys with guns terrorizing the border. I've been called a racist, an assassin, but people don't realize how many people's lives we've saved out here. Regardless of what some of my guys' idea on immigration is, I still don't want to see somebody die out here because the coyote left him because he wanted more money and he wouldn't give it to him.
Tim says that when he and his men find migrants in distress, they provide first aid and try to make them feel comfortable until Border Patrol arrives.
And as for the guns, Tim claims he's never fired a weapon in the field, except one time when he shot in the air in a moment of frustration. He says he would only draw his weapon in self-defense.
Most of this part of southern Arizona is public land, so it's entirely legal for the group to be out here.
But just because it's legal doesn't mean Border Patrol wants them here.
We certainly don't encourage anyone to go out and do what these groups are doing.
I asked a Border Patrol spokesman, Peter Bittigan, about Arizona Border Recon.
We appreciate the concern that some of these groups have for the problems that we're confronting along the border, but them being out there and interacting with people that are coming across the border, interacting with narcotics traffickers and things of that nature is extremely dangerous. We don't want anyone to lose their life in a situation that someone is not trained for.
Tim didn't come off in our interview as a particularly violent guy, but it's probably worth mentioning that according to an Al Jazeera report, Tim was being looked into by the FBI some years ago after an anonymous tip accused him of building pipe bombs and leaving them on migrant trails. Tim says the allegations are bogus, and the tip probably came from some disgruntled person he turned away.
Regardless, what Arizona Border Recon is doing is, of course, controversial. The Southern Poverty Law Center has it on a watch list of nativist extremist groups, which are groups with extreme anti-immigrant views.
Tim Foley claims that his group's focus is drug cartels, not border crossers. But for someone who is not policing the border for migrants, he does talk about immigration a lot and the effect he perceives it has on the country.
It's not a thing about race. It's about sustainability. We give. We are a giving nation, but you can only give so much before it ends up costing you everything. I've given my all. I did the good American citizen thing where I paid my taxes and got my little picket fence. You know why they call it the American dream? Because you got to be asleep to believe it now.
After a few hours at the Arizona Border Recon camp, we took off, heading back to the desert on the 2-hour drive north back to Tucson. And, you know, you cover the border, Fernando. What did you take away from this whole experience?
For many years now, these types of groups have not really surfaced a lot. They haven't been in the news. We don't really see a whole lot of organized anti-illegal immigration movement going on in southern Arizona like we did a few years ago. But this reminds us that there are people who are so committed to this that they will drop their lives and move to the middle of nowhere to control a border they think is not secure.
I was looking at numbers from the Southern Poverty Law Center before, and they said there were 300 such groups maybe back in 2010, and now there are only about 19 of them. So the numbers have clearly gone down.
And I think that that kind of comes and goes in waves. That's actually what Tim and Peter were telling us when we were out there, is that the movement will kind of pick up popularity again and then drop depending on what's going on in the national spotlight. And I think right now, immigration is very much in the forefront as we move into political season.
Thank you so much for coming out with me. That was really interesting.
Anytime.
Now, it probably doesn't come as a surprise that some people in Arizona are so strongly opposed to border crossers. Arizona has long been in the national spotlight for taking a very hard line on immigration. The state is home to Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio, who has taken immigration enforcement, that's usually the responsibility of the federal government, into his own hands.
We have a big problem in this state and across our nation. Something has to be done. The federal government needs help, and we're here to help.
But things got most heated in 2010, when then-Governor Jan Brewer signed SB 1070, which is often called the Show Me Your Papers law. It required state and local police officers to ask for proof of citizenship during regular police stops.
The bill I'm about to sign into law, Senate Bill 1070, represents another tool for our state to use as we work to solve a crisis that we did not create and the federal government has refused to fix.
Latino activists, though, fought back, which is how an undocumented 21-year-old young woman found herself in the middle of a national showdown on immigrant rights. Dulce Matus was brought here from Mexico when she was 15 years old. She was a star student on the robotics team in high school and got into the engineering program at Arizona State University. But then Arizona's harsh new laws propelled her toward a life of activism. Here she is in 2012, speaking at a rally outside the Arizona State Supreme Court.
SB 1070 has created an environment that is not good for Arizona. We see the attacks to immigrant youth every day. Some of us decided to stand up and come out as undocumented and unafraid.
Several years later, Dulce now has a college degree and she owns a real estate business in Phoenix. Recently, when I was in town, I decided to stop by to talk with Dulce about how things have played out in Arizona.
Hola, ¿cómo estás?
So we're sitting in your, this is your real estate office?
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
But you actually have a degree in electrical engineering?
That is correct.
Okay. You've built robots?
Yes.
Right? But on the wall in your real estate business office is actually something that most people don't have. Can you just tell me what it is?
Oh, it's a plate of Time 100 magazine on their edition for 100 most influential people in the world.
Dulce's road to becoming one of Time magazine's most influential people in the world began in 2006 when a new Arizona state law, Proposition 300, caused her to lose funding for college.
They say, Dulce, you're undocumented, so you have to pay out-of-state tuition. And on top of that, any scholarships that you have, we're going to take them away. We don't care if you have the good grades. We don't care if you have the community service. We don't care if you deserve or you earned the scholarship. We're going to take it away because of your immigration status.
Some students were forced to drop out of school, but others applied for a private scholarship offered to undocumented students. Dulce applied, and she got it. She was invited to an orientation where she met others who were in her same situation.
I go to the orientation, and there's a room full of people. You just think in your head and assume, so if all these people are here for this scholarship, that means that they're in the same situation as me. They're undocumented. It was like, oh, there's undocumented people going to college. I always thought that I was the only one.
Because of Prop 300, Dulce and other undocumented students came together and formed a support group.
Everybody was scared because if we met, it would be a group, a classroom full of undocumented students. We were thinking that people were spying on us and that suddenly if we met, Yo Arpaio was going to show up and raid us and all of us will end up being deported.
That support group became the roots of the Arizona Dream Act Coalition, a group that Dulce co-founded. It also helped Dulce to come to terms with her identity.
I was very proud of who I had become as undocumented. And everybody was trying to put shame on who we were. It's been a struggle. It has made me stronger. It has made our community stronger. Being able to speak up and say, I'm not a criminal. I'm not some drug dealer. I'm just like you.
Frankly, a lot of people say, why do you stay? Why stay in Arizona?
I mean, it's very easy to just say, hey, I'm just going to run, or I can't take this challenge, or I'm not going to solve this problem. Although that we may be known for SB 1070, things have changed. The author of SB 1070 was recalled. The person who signed SB 1070 is no longer in office. Dreamers who have DACA now are able to have driver's licenses. Dreamers who have DACA are now able to get in-state tuition.
The political tone in Arizona has really changed since SB 1070. The new governor, Doug Ducey, a conservative Republican, hasn't spoken much about immigration. Meanwhile, Sheriff Joe is embroiled in legal troubles. He's expected not to win re-election after six consecutive terms. Dulce is proud of the role that she and her fellow activists have had in moving the conversation forward. And when she looks at Arizona today, she sees her peers playing a bigger and bigger part in the state's future.
If you look at Arizona demographics, right now, over 43% of children in K-1 through 12 are Latino. We cannot be a majority that doesn't go to school, that doesn't vote. That's what the opposition wants. They want us to be ignorant. They don't want us to go vote. They don't want us to share a story. The worst thing that we can do as an individual, as in a community, is to stay quiet or not do anything about it.
Thanks to Dulce Matus for speaking with me. Now, there's a lot more to the border than just immigration issues, everyone. So when we come back on Latino USA, we're going to dive face first into a border world delicacy.
You don't want to take anyone on a first date and watch them eat a Sonoran hot dog because it's really messy and not very attractive.
A Sonoran dog is definitely not a first date food. It's more like a third date, I think, is about the time that, you know, you're ready to get to the Sonoran dog.
Yeah, right. Why you shouldn't take a first date to a hot dog stand in Tucson. Stay with us. No se vayan. Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to Latino USA. The Ask Me Another podcast is like trivia night, but a lot funnier. And on the latest episode, they have an extra special guest, Sir Patrick Stewart. He talks about living in Brooklyn, becoming a knight, and his new talk show, Blunt Talk. Then Sir Patrick recites well-known song lyrics with all the gravitas of a West End performance. So go play along now at npr.org/podcasts or on the NPR One app.
Times I waited patiently for you, and you'll do just what you choose to do. And I will be alone again tonight, my dear.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people from diverse backgrounds and ensure that they reach their fullest potential. More information is available at WTGrantFoundation.org. And the Annie E. Casey Foundation, with more than 25 years of Kids Count data on the well-being of America's children, providing access to national and local information as well as state rankings. Learn more at datacenter.kidscount.org.
Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. I'm here with our producer, Marlon Bishop, and today we're taking our show to southern Arizona, to a place that we're calling Border World.
It's an in-between place.
Right, so far in our show, we've been talking a lot about immigration. But people aren't the only things that cross the border.
It's ideas.
And sounds.
Tastes.
And in Border World, culture is constantly crossing back and forth.
Up ahead, we have a few stories about cultural mashups that could only happen in the borderlands. The first comes from Fernanda Echavarri.
Hola.
So we first heard from Fernanda earlier in the show. She's a reporter for KUAZ, Arizona Public Media in Tucson. And Fernanda is going to tell us about a peculiar hot dog.
Yes, the Sonoran hot dog.
Okay, but first some background. I met you, Fernanda, at a fellowship for journalists who cover immigration. It was in Atlanta. And the whole time, you were just raving about Tucson this, and how much you love Tucson, right?
I do love Tucson. It has been my home for half my life, and I love Tucson. It's like this little gem in Arizona that I don't think that a lot of people know about.
So I had never been at that point, but I was just like, all right, I'm sold. You sold me on Tucson. Let's check it out. What is it that you like so much about Tucson?
I think I have to start with the people here in Tucson. And yes, I know it's because I've been here a long time. And of course, I love the people here. But there's really a great community of artists and musicians in Tucson. I love the desert. Love, love, love the sunsets in the desert. You got to see some of them when you were here, Marlon. And it doesn't matter how many hundreds of sunsets you see. Each one is so beautiful. And then, of course, there's the really great Mexican food we have in Tucson.
And I was on an all-taco diet, actually, when I was in Tucson, as Fernanda can attest. And so, speaking of food, let's go back to the Sonoran hot dog. Tell us about the hot dog.
The Sonoran hot dog is covered in pinto beans, fresh salsa, and sometimes even guacamole. Plus, there's another very important ingredient that I don't really want to give away quite yet.
That really is quite a hot dog.
It is, and I can see why it may sound a little weird to outsiders, but it is totally normal for us here. So anyway, I recently went on a taste test to the two places here in Tucson that both claim to have the best Sonoran hot dog.
I feel like the Sonoran hot dog is such a perfect, you know, symbol of who we are in Tucson and in the border in general, because it's such, you know, it is such an encounter of different styles and ingredients and flavors.
I brought along this guy, Logan Phillips. He's a local poet, teacher, Latin music DJ. He's just basically all things borderland.
I consider myself fronterizo. I'm not Latino or Chicano by blood. And yet there is a way of being in the borderlands in which we are all kind of ethnically mixed, but we are also culturally mixed at the same time. So
I'm taking Logan to BK Tacos. It's one of the OGs of Sonoran Dogs.
I'm Benjamin Galas. I'm the owner of this restaurant.
There's a sign on the window that claims they have the best Sonoran hot dogs around. And Benjamin is in the kitchen about to show us how they're made.
Okay.
It all starts with a bun, which is baked daily at a small panaderia down the street.
We're going to put the hot dog in, and it's a hot dog wrapped in bacon.
Yes, you heard right. He said bacon. A thin cut of bacon wrapped tightly and perfectly around the whole hot dog and then grilled. It's the bacon that really makes the Sonoran hot dog a truly decadent experience. Benjamin scoops out whole pinto beans and then puts them on top of the bacon-wrapped hot dog.
And after that, we're going to add grilled onion. We grill these
Yellow onions that have been sautéed next to the hot dogs so they can absorb some of that bacon flavor. He tops it off with fresh-cut onions and tomatoes, and then reaches for the first of three plastic dispensers, squirting zigzag lines of mayo from top to bottom, then a thin line of yellow mustard and a thin line of green salsa.
And it adds flavor. It's not really hot, but it adds flavor. And then on the side...
The jalapeno salsa is the finishing touch in the kitchen before the hot dog lands in the hands of its lucky customer. In this case, that's Logan, who goes to the salsa bar to top off the Sonoran dog with cheese and guacamole.
Guacamole, como no.
But before taking the first bite, he reaches for another very important item, napkins.
So one of the challenges with the Sonoran hot dog is how to eat it, because you get carried away with the toppings. So I'm just going to jump in and see what happens. Mm.
I think this is the moment, Fernando, where you should tell the audience why you aren't eating the hot dogs yourself.
Okay. I brought Logan along to try the hot dogs because I'm a vegetarian. Although I should say that I did try some Sonoran hot dogs many years ago before giving up meat, and they were delicious.
Well, I'm sure Logan's not complaining about taking your place.
No, he's not.
It took me two bites to get to the actual hot dog. Yeah, the bacon is really the flavor center of it, I think. It has that smokiness to it, and it interacts with the beans just in the right way.
There are dozens of hot dog carts and restaurants selling this beloved food in southern Arizona. But a story about Sonoran hot dogs would not be complete without a visit to El Güero Canelo, BK's biggest rival. The two have been featured in the New York Times, the Food Channel's Man vs. Food, and Food Wars. The story goes back to the early 90s, when El Güero Canelo himself, Daniel Contreras, and BK's owner Benjamin set up food carts on opposite sides of the streets in Tucson's south side. The two owners were friends, but they soon became rivals as they fought for customers of Sonoran hot dogs. Since then, the two have claimed that they each have the best Sonoran hot dog. And over the years, Benjamin says things have gotten a little less heated.
Now we are friends. We talk once in a while.
But they're still competitors.
I think I have the best hot dogs, but I'm pretty sure if you ask him, he's going to say the same thing.
And yes, everyone at Güero Canelo says they have the best Sonoran dogs.
My name is Marcos Preciado. I've been with the company for over 13 years. I'm the store manager right now.
Marco says the buns are baked in a factory in Magdalena, Mexico, and cross the border into the U.S. every other day.
You want to come back here so I can show you?
He reaches inside the warmer and pulls out a fluffy hot dog bun. He opens it up and steam comes out.
Frank wrapped on bacon all the way down. We get the whole beans, and we put them all the way down, and we kind of stuff it down there. And then we get a yellow pepper.
Let's pause here to talk about the chile güero, or spicy yellow pepper. It can be pretty spicy. Both Güero Canelo and BK's, really just about any hot dog stand in town, they grill the yellow pepper and then serve it with a hot dog.
Kind of decorate it a little bit.
Marcos tells Logan that he prefers to not add any other toppings to his Sonoran hot dog.
I prefer it like this, but we have a lot.
Once it's ready, Logan's hot dog from El Güero Canelo is neatly packed all inside the big fluffy hot dog bun.
I do appreciate the emphasis on organization. It's really true. You know, you think as a hot dog aficionado, as such as I consider myself from time to time, that it's kind of a chaotic food.
You don't want to take anyone on a first date and watch them eat a Sonoran hot dog because it's really messy and not very attractive, but this one seems to be really neatly packed. So maybe that won't be the case when you start biting into it.
That's true. I do feel, though, that like a Sonoran dog is definitely not a first date food. It's more like a third date, I think, is about the time that, you know, you're ready to get to the Sonoran dog.
So now it's time for Logan to try the Sonoran dog at El Güero Canelo and tell us which one he liked more.
I do appreciate that this bread was hecho in Mexico and crossed the border this morning. So I feel like the bread kind of winning over here at Güero, but I feel like overall the effect with the guacamole and the salsa, I do feel like BK came out on top, but it's a very subjective opinion.
As for the origin of the Sonoran hot dog, it kind of depends on who you ask. But essentially, it started out in the state of Sonora in northern Mexico and made its way to Arizona sometime in the last 30 years. And like many things in this border region, Logan says it's a mix of cultures and ingredients that sort of just make sense to us here.
When it comes down to it, on some days, I think I kind of, you know, sympathize and empathize and identify a little bit with Sonoran hot dog, you know, being not Latino myself, but having grown up in the borderlands and being a bilingual person, you know, I realize that I too am kind of a mix of ingredients and influences, and I'm not easily understood.
So according to Logan, the hot dog is more than a hot dog.
Totally. And you know, when you asked me earlier why I love Tucson, I think the Sonoran hot dog is sort of symbolic for why. Tucson is this place where I feel at home. And as somebody who was born and raised in central Mexico, but has been living in the U.S. for half my life, I think Tucson, like me, is just a little bit of both.
Yeah, I definitely felt that way when I was in Tucson. Well, thanks, Fernanda, so much for that story and sharing your city's bizarre hot dog with us.
Of course.
I didn't expect it. I'm a little bit surprised, but I actually want a Sonoran hot dog right about now. Okay, so speaking of cultural hybrids, it's not just food that's all mixed up in southern Arizona. It's also music.
Yeah, Tucson is a little city, but it has a big music scene.
Now, I don't know how close you've been paying attention, but all of the music that we've been playing on this episode is from Arizona-based bands, and there's definitely a sound to them.
Yeah, it's kind of a Tucson sound, you could say.
So we want to tell you a bit about the bands behind the music that we've been playing today.
And I figured we'd invite our Tucson guide, Fernanda Echavarri, back to talk about them with me. I feel like it's been forever since we've spoken.
Way too long.
So the first band we're going to listen to is Calexico,
which I would say is probably one of the most famous bands to come out of Tucson.
Let's start by listening to this song, Sprawl. Kind of the first thing that comes to mind when I'm listening to a bunch of these bands from Tucson, which is, there's this really like cinematic feel, like almost as if I'm in an old Western film.
Either that or a David Lynch movie.
Also, there's like a creepiness vibe.
Calexico has been around since the 1990s, and it's probably one of those first bands to truly embody that Tucson sound. Sergio Mendoza, who plays keys in the band, describes it as a sort of blend of rock and roll with more traditional Mexican instruments like
mariachi trumpets, pedal steel, accordion, upright.
That is indeed what the music sounds like. You know, as soon as you hear those trumpet or the accordions, you instantly are kind of reminded of Norteño music from Mexico.
And Sergio doesn't just play in Calexico. He also has his own project, Sergio Mendoza y la Orquesta.
This song is called Mambo Mexicano. So
So if the other song was a David Lynch movie, this one is like a Quentin Tarantino movie, maybe.
Yes, I can totally hear that.
So Sergio Mendoza calls his style of music psychedelic mambo. It sounds like you took a Cuban mambo and you put it in a Western soundtrack.
Sergio grew up literally on both sides of the border, and that influenced the way he approached music. And in the beginning, he was listening to basically whatever was on Mexican radio.
I was listening to cumbia, I was listening to corridos. Eventually, in the early 90s, I started listening to Mexican rock, rock en español.
But then when he moved to the U.S., he started jamming out with kids that were in the neighborhood, so American kids.
They wanted to play Led Zeppelin, the Beatles.
And so when you combine those things, you know, rock and Mexican sounds, you could end up with this kind of mixed sensibility, a little bit of both.
And another great band from Tucson is Vox Urbana.
The band has kind of made up this genre for themselves. They call themselves Garage Cumbia.
The song is called La Piedra y la Bala, which translates to the stone and the bullet. And Vox Urbana wrote this song after a Border Patrol agent shot a teenage boy across the international fence. And the Border Patrol agent said the boy had thrown a rock.
Before we're done talking about music, Fernanda, do you have one last song to send us off with?
Yeah, let's keep up with that cumbia theme, and let's end with a song by also a Tucson band called Chicha Dust, and the song is called Como Un Ave.
Thanks, Fernanda, again so much for being our Tucson spirit guide, and it was a lot of fun to have you on the show today.
It was great being here.
And we always end our episodes with some wisdom, with some sabiduría. So what are we taking away from today, Marlon?
Well, you know, all this talk about the border is making me kind of zoom out and think about borders around the world. You know, I feel like we're hearing about a lot of tensions around borders. There's migrants constantly dying on the trip from North Africa to Europe, you know, in the aquatic border, that's the Mediterranean Sea. There's Brazil, where they've been sending soldiers to secure its Amazon border, where more and more people from around the world were crossing looking for work during the World Cup.
And I'm thinking about the anti-immigrant, anti-refugee protests that are happening in Germany, too. It's also connected.
Totally. And, you know, as globalization kind of progresses, goods are moving more easily through the world. You know, there's all these free trade agreements being signed, but people's movements seem to be increasingly being restricted. And at the same time, there's a lot of anxiety about the kind of cultural and economic effects that migration might have on the people who live in the countries that are receiving migrants.
But there is the issue that these are real human people, and that if they have no place to go, they're going to move.
Exactly. It seems that there's clearly something that needs to be figured out. Okay, so on today's show, we've met people who are kind of archetypes about how you might respond to a border. You know, there was the woman who sympathizes with the plight of migrants and tries to help them migrate. There's the man who's angry about the effect of migrants on his own economic situation as he sees it and moves to the border to stop them.
But, you know, I think about that Sonoran hot dog and the fact that, you know, that was created on the border. Whatever gets resolved or doesn't regarding the politics of the borders, culture has always traveled freely throughout human history, and I don't think that's going to stop.
No, I don't either. So hopefully some kind of cool hot dogs will be popping up on borders all over the world.
Taco hot dogs.
Now, I don't know how you would do that.
Thanks a lot for your reporting, Marlon.
Yeah, thanks, Maria. This is a really eye-opening experience for me.
And that's it for this week, everyone. Latino USA This Week was produced by Marlon Bishop, Daisy Rosario, Lita Hartman, Michael Simon Johnson, Antonia Cerejido, Julia Alsop, and Sarah Barrett. Our engineer is Cornelius McMoyler. Nadia Raymond is our music consultant. We had help this week from WBEZ in Chicago. Nancy Trujillo makes it all happen. Special thanks to Fernanda Echavarri and KUAZ Arizona Public Media in Tucson. Our show is founded at the University of Texas at Austin. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week. And in the meantime, look for us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr, and I'll see you on Instagram. Hasta la próxima, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation and the Ford Foundation, dedicated to working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide.
Things were going well. Why do I keep coming down on that?
It's okay. Maybe that's how you express that feeling.
That's and how I express to, my wellness.
I'm trying to impose my wellness on you, so, you know.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the Kresge Foundation, expanding opportunities in America's cities through grant-making and social investing. More at kresge.org. And the Cy Sims Foundation, since 1985, supporting advances in science, education, and the arts towards a better life. More information is available at cysimsfoundation.org. This is NPR.